What's up, Goreheads, and welcome to another episode of the Extreme I did this last time. Extreme Horror Replay podcast. And this time, Nancy and I, my beautiful wife Nancy, is with me. But we have something a little different for you today. This time, we are talking with Will Robson, who is a comic book artist for both Marvel and DC. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, so he hails from the UK, and so we're going to be talking comics and zombies.
You don't sound like you're from the UK.
Well, I did grow up in America, in New Jersey for a long time.
Oh, now so I can hear it, yeah.
New Jersey, but a lot of people think that I'm Australian because it's sort of the blend of both accents.
Okay,
well, that's neat.
So Americans always think I sound English, and then English people always think I sound American. But can't win, but there you go.
Okay, all right. Now, as I told you, I did briefly meet your brother Alex on a different show, Watching Films on the Toilet podcast.
Yes.
And I know you guys have two shows together, The Batman, the Animated Series, and the Spider-Man Animated Series podcasts. So, yes. Well, why don't you tell us about those briefly, or introduce, I guess I should have you introduce yourself.
That'd be nice.
Well, so I'm Will Robson, and as you said, yeah, I draw comic books for Marvel and DC Comics, along with a plethora of other companies like Image, IDW, Boom, the list goes on. I'm also a writer of comics as well. I recently wrote a Casey Jones one-shot for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles at IDW, which was a lot of fun. And I do a podcast with my brother, and we basically do deep dives into Spider-Man the Animated Series and Batman the Animated Series, the cartoons from the 90s. And we have people on from that show that were voice actors in the show or directors or writers. And it's a lot of fun. And, you know, that was like my brother's passion project that he wanted to do. And I was more than happy to join him doing it. And it's really grown into something that's fun. And, you know, like we just recently on our Batman show, we were interviewed the voice actor who was Tim Drake on Batman the Animated Series, which was awesome. You know, talking to these people that you remember from your childhood, like speaking to you, is just such a bizarre thing. Mm-hmm. And it's great. Yeah.
Okay. So, brutal honesty here, we don't know much about comics. Now, our son Griffin is a big Marvel fan. Me personally, if I had to choose, I would probably go with Batman.
Yep.
But Nancy probably.
I used to watch or read the Archie comics.
Archie's good stuff, yeah. Marvel has done crossovers with Archie meets the Punisher and stuff like that. There's loads of fun stuff like that.
Okay. See, and then I used to watch, well, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Batman, the Animated Series. Never got into Spider-Man. But obviously drawing for both different of the two major superhero comics, Marvel and DC, is that something you just kind of pick up on your own when you were a kid, or did you enjoy the cartoons first and then just kind of draw and then just get better and better and better at drawing them over time? Or is that something that you just kind of naturally have the talent for?
Well, I think my earliest memory really is, I think I was introduced to comics via Spider-Man the Animated Series and Batman the Animated Series. You know, those shows were tailored for kids of my age, because I was born in 1990. So all of those shows were absolutely pinpointed towards me. And then I remember having a few comics as a kid, especially when we moved to America in 97. There was this really fun store called Jambalaya in New Jersey that had baseball cards and basketball cards and comic books. And I would go there and I go, hey, I love these characters from these shows. And I start reading these books. And then that's how I discovered an artist called Todd McFarlane, who is a really legendary guy in the business. He created the character Spawn.
Right.
and he had a hugely successful run on Spider-Man in the late 80s, early 90s. And then he went off to create Image Comics, which, you know, made The Walking Dead and all these super popular titles. But I discovered his artwork and I was like, oh, I love this. So as a kid, I would like try and track down all his work. I even had bed sheets that had his artwork on it. And I loved it for a long time. And I was, you know, both me and my brother were good artists as kids. You know, there's a lot of kids that you, it always starts with you, a kid copying their favorite art. And it looking fairly close to what the original was. And that's sort of a way to see like, oh, you have a natural aptitude towards enjoying this. You know, some kids, you know, as a kid, I would draw for pleasure. Absolutely. Right.
We were just talking about that. Go ahead.
Is your kid drawing for pleasure or something?
Well, Ben and I have both been pretty good at illustrating and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we only do it for like if we're forced to. Yeah. But our kids are different and they do the whole freestyle, you know, have a sketchbook and, you know, do their own like anime and stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, one thing me and my brother did all the time as kids was fill up sketchbooks where we would draw loads of Marvel and DC characters and just loved it because we just loved the artwork and the style. And it was just fun. You know, it was just that's what it was at the end of the day. It was absolutely fun. And then as I got into high school, I started falling in love with cinema, and that was a huge passion of mine, so much so that I ended up going to university to film school, studying the craft of making movies and also how to write them, and all this different stuff. And as I was at university, I wasn't really drawing anymore. I was drawing my own comic at the time, Dino Zombies, which was like a horror comic that was like Jurassic Park meets The Walking Dead. That was my pitch for it.
Right.
It goes to show I've always loved freaking zombies. But it wasn't something I wanted to pursue as a career until I walked randomly into a comic book store in my college town and found that DC had just relaunched all of their comics back to issue one. It was called The New 52. And I found the Batman book, which was being drawn by Greg Capullo, who drew Spawn with Tom McFarlane. And I was like, whoa, I love this art. I used to love Tom McFarlane and Spawn. This is amazing. And that book made me fall back in love with the comics. And when I was at film school, I was making this independent movie and it cost me so much money to produce. And I was like, well, this avenue to get into film by creating my own stuff is way too expensive for me to do. But if I take another interest of mine, which is art, and pursue that, then I can create whole worlds without having to spend anything but my time.
Right.
So I listened to a bunch of podcasts where Greg Capullo and all these other people, Jim Lee, who's very famous, he runs DC Comics now. They all talked about how they basically said to their parents, give me 3 years. I'll live off of you for 3 years. And I'm going to draw all day, every day. I'm going to improve my art skills to get to the point where I can draw professionally in comics. And if in 3 years I'm not good enough, then I'll just forget about it. And it was really interesting to hear that many comic book artists like had the same idea of how they wanted to do it or how to break in. So I just said, okay, well, I've graduated from film school. Let's do that. And I did that. And I sat down, knuckled down, drew all day, every day. And then I was lucky enough in 2016 to find that Marvel was coming to the UK to do portfolio reviews, to look for artists at a big convention in London. Okay. And I went to the convention, handed in my portfolio, which I worked really hard to make look good. And luckily I got a call back. And then sort of in a few months, I got a call from Marvel to draw an issue of Star-Lord. And I was over the moon, like, you know, my dream had come true. It was absolutely incredible.
Okay.
And that's sort of how I fell into it. So it was a bit of having a natural interest for it as a child. And then as an adult, knuckling down and getting good at it, because I could always look at an image, copy it perfectly and really enjoy that, but I could never draw from my own brain. But that's because I didn't understand the fundamentals of how to actually figure draw and lighting and shading and all this stuff, which it takes years. Like I'm still learning, I'm still a student today. Yeah. And you know, it's a tough drawing is not easy. You have to learn how to draw everything.
Yeah. And see, that's one of the things like Nancy brought up when her and I were in high school or a little bit of college, we drew, like she said, what we were forced to draw. Mm-hmm. Our kids, they can sit down and rattle off page after page after page of just anything. We're not quite sure where they got that.
Well, if you noticed, and I never understood what this meant because I didn't pay attention in art class, but they all do the, when they're doing a head, they do the oval and then the tri or the cross to get the eyes even.
They're properly doing it then. Yeah, wow.
So, and I never did that, which is probably why my dad usually said that the eyes are all googly on that, man. Well, we have a daughter that when she was in her senior year, she's loved art forever. Yeah. She likes painting, especially watercolors. And when she got to her senior year and they asked her what she wanted to do, and she said she wanted to be an artist, it was her art teacher that said, "You don't want to be an artist, believe me." So she got into psychology, and currently she is teaching little kids how to paint. And,
oh, wow.
And her goal in the end, when she graduates from college, is to be an art therapist.
That's really awesome. Yeah. I love that.
So, yeah.
That's great. I mean, I understand why an art teacher would tell someone, like, don't get into art. I mean, even me, like, I'm, you know, I work for these big companies, and a lot of people think, like, oh, you draw Batman and Superman, you must be mega rich. And I'm like, no, I make, like, just, like, minimum wage, essentially. Like, it's the only people at the tippy top that are making the big bucks off of royalties and stuff like that. You know, that's the thing about the art industry. It's you're either barely surviving or you're doing great. You just, you know, it's a weird industry because it's art. I'm just putting doodles on a piece of paper and people seem to enjoy it.
What little Nancy and I know about comics, I did read some Dark Horse comics around 7th, 8th grade, mostly like Predator versus Alien, but
nice.
Obviously you said you went to film school, so you're obviously a film TV fan.
Absolutely.
How do you feel about the EC comics, Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Horror and stuff like that? Were you ever a big fan of those?
Yeah. That's something I found later in my sort of mid-20s that I really got into, because I was never much of a horror guy for a long time because horror used to scare me too much where I wouldn't be able to watch it.
Right.
And I sort of completely, but I always loved, like, for instance, growing up in the 90s, I was exposed to Resident Evil on PlayStation 1 and I loved it so much, but I couldn't play it because I was too terrified to play it, but I loved watching other people play it and just experiencing the horror, but not being the one that has to shoot the zombie or run away from them.
Right.
And like as a teen, I got really into things like zombie movies because I just had always loved zombies. And that was my favorite sort of horror genre for a long time. And that led me into getting into things like The Evil Dead, which I really fell in love with. Mm-hmm. And then it's been weird. Like only in my mid-20s did I start to really love horror. Because when I was like 5, I caught a double feature late at night. Or at least that's what my memory tells me what happened. Yeah. Where it was Jaws followed by The Exorcist. And Jaws has terrified. It's my favorite movie. I watch it every year on my birthday. I love it so much. That's made me petrified of sharks for my whole life. And then The Exorcist, I still struggle to watch that movie today, even though I love it. It's just that little girl scares the crap out of me. She does.
we couldn't watch. My dad wouldn't let us watch The Exorcist in our house because he's Catholic.
Yeah, Nancy grew up Catholic.
Right.
Yeah, so that I've never seen it.
I don't think my parents would have let me be watching it either. They just didn't know that I was watching it, basically. And then I saw Thriller on MTV as a kid, and the zombies in that just for some reason just were the scariest thing I'd ever seen. Not the dancing part where they're having a good time, but it's the scene at the end where she's running in the house and they're all breaking in through the windows and they slowly sort of surround her like hot lava slowly like coming towards you. And yeah, it just the things that scared me when I was a little kid is things I've become absolutely obsessed with as an adult. And yeah, but like you said, with those horror anthology series is such a poignant part of horror, the short storytelling. It's always been something I really have enjoyed. And that's what I'm trying to do with my new zombie book that I've launched on Kickstarter, is a zombie anthology comic, because I feel like there's just so many stories to tell in that genre and mash that genre up with other genres. And I want to get the vibe of someone reading, you know, Tales of the Crypt or you know, something along those lines, but it all revolving around different takes on zombies and the idea of what a zombie story could be.
Yeah, I was actually going to use your last comment as a segue. You are starting your own comic, and yes, you are doing a Kickstarter.
It's just called Outbreaks.
Just Outbreaks.
The Amazing Outbreaks was just because I was doing a homage cover to The Amazing Spider-Man.
Gotcha.
Homage covers are very popular in comics where that was a Tom McFarlane cover that I was copying, but doing it in my own style with my own characters. And that's a very popular thing to do in the industry.
I've noticed, because we like to go antiquing, and I've noticed when we look in the comic books, there's like nothing in the horror genre at all.
Yeah.
And we were lucky to get that Tales from the Crypt, because that was, we're always looking for that white whale again.
Well, so horror comics used to be very popular back in, I guess, the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah.
Until I believe there was some sort of tragedy that happened where a kid, I think they murdered another child, and they found that he had a bunch of Tales of the Crypts or Tales of Horror comics. And then this huge movement happened by the parents where they said they literally took all the books and burnt them and destroyed them. Yeah. And this thing happened where comics then suddenly had to be approved by something called the Comics Code Authority, which was essentially censoring books so that, you know, like a rating system so that parents knew that if they bought their kid an issue of Spider-Man, you know, there's not going to be, you know, a guy chopping heads off on page 3 or something like that.
I was going to say, it seems like they've kind of gotten away from that more recently.
And that would explain why we can't find them anywhere. Because if they do exist, they're probably so expensive. Yeah. Nobody will be able to afford it.
The horror comics are making a major comeback, especially in the independent scene. And a lot of these horror comics are getting turned into properties. I mean, Walking Dead was a great example of that. It is my favorite comic book of all time, as I am a zombie nut. And that got turned into one of the most popular television shows of all time. There's all these books by Image and independent people that are just making all these great horror stories that are just getting translated into film and television. And it's a really exciting time. It feels like it's sort of, there's a resurgence of horror in comics.
And that's good. In an era where everything is just so like electronic and, you know, there's video games and stuff like that, it's nice to have an actual practical piece of art that you can get entertained by.
And yeah,
have it not absolutely. Be on TV or, you know, on an MP3 or even on a podcast.
Well, funnily enough, I don't buy really my comics physically anymore. I get them all digitally because through, I think it's Amazon, they have a system called Comixology where you can buy comics digitally, and you sort of, as you flip through your phone or your iPad, it goes panel to panel. And just for, I'm weird because I'm a collector at heart. I love collecting retro video games, but I'm also a minimalist, so those two are always fighting with each other. So I've made the space now for my retro video games, and I've subsided my comics into a digital collection.
Well, that's good. Just kind of staying on top of the modern
technology.
Yeah, modern technology. That's cool.
So, okay, you said Walking Dead was one of your favorite shows, but in terms of zombie movies, what's your top of the list for zombie movies?
I think my favorite zombie movie of all time is George A. Romero's Day of the Dead. I don't know if you guys have seen that one. It's the middle one in between Dawn of the Dead and between Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead. It was sort of the first zombie movie that took a look at the zombies, not in the outbreak stage, but deep into the zombie apocalypse, where we don't really know how long it's been. It's been either months or years, and there's this military outpost in the middle of nowhere that's fenced off. and keeping the zombies away, and they're just trying to basically survive and also attempting to try and cure the zombie virus. And that was another thing that introduced smart zombies as well. I love Bub in that, how he's training him. You know, he's rewarding him by learning how to like shave his face by giving him someone's brains in a bucket. And yeah, I just think that movie introduced a lot of really interesting things, and I just love the vibe of that. It also introduced that if you chop someone's limb off when they've been bit, that they can potentially not turn into a zombie. So it was quite a revolutionary movie. I know a lot of people sort of skim past it because it is, you know, it's very 80s. The acting is quite cheesy. You know, not the best dialogue wise. It's not the best, but I think that movie has a lot of heart and really revolutionary in that genre. So I love that movie, but I also love Shaun of the Dead because, well, I'm English.
We love that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those movies that we'll put on once or twice a year. Just
the kids love it.
Yeah. Laugh with it.
It's a great, I love dark comedies. In fact, the first story in my new book, Outbreaks, is a dark comedy about two guys locked in the drunk tank at the beginning of the zombie apocalypse. And they wake up, and on the other side of the bars, there's just zombies reaching for them. They got to figure out, wait, we're locked in the jail cell. How the heck are we going to get out of this situation? And that was really, and it's there's a lot of fun and laughter in that, which I've taken from things like Shaun of the Dead, because, you know, putting comedy and horror is always a great combination. You look at Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness and stuff like that. If it's blended right between horror and humor, it really makes wonderful stuff. So yeah, I love those two movies. I love a lot of Train to Busan was a recent one that I thought was great.
Yeah.
I like
that one. Had the heart to it.
Tons of heart. My wife really liked that movie. She just watches things that I recommend because she's not as into cinema as I am. But she really enjoyed that one. I love the 90s remake of Night of the Living Dead made by Tom Savini. I think that's another hidden gem.
Yeah, we've seen that.
In the genre. And the classics, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, all that stuff.
I have a question. So is there like a code of conduct that you follow? I know there's like restrictions when it comes to horror comics and stuff, but is there a code of conduct that you follow that's kind of similar to the Walking Dead never says the word zombie?
Ooh, that's a good question.
No, because since the nice thing about the book on Kickstarter is that I'm producing it myself and I'm selling it directly to people. So I don't have to follow any guidelines or things like that. Like if I was selling this book through a company, they probably say like, oh, you can't use curse words here, or maybe you tone down the gore here. Like for instance, I was just drawing a Joker book for DC and I misinterpreted the script where two characters got shot and they didn't say where they got shot. So I just assumed they got shot in the head. So I made their brains explode out and blood fly everywhere. And DC was like, you have to change that. That's not allowed. Yeah. That is too gory.
How disappointing.
So you brought up the script. Again, this comes from us not knowing anything about comics. So they give you a script and you just kind of draw what you perceive the script to be, and then you have to go in and make changes, or...
Yeah, so the way the comic book industry works is there's a company, and then those companies own properties. So DC, in this sense, they own DC, so they own Batman and Spider-Man. I mean, Marvel owns Spider-Man. But then there's other companies that own properties, like IDW owns Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers, and they pay for licenses to be able to produce content for these properties.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they do. That's what the company does. They get these... licenses, like for instance, Marvel's making Alien comics now because Disney bought up 20th Century Fox or whoever owned that, so they get basically to make everybody. Alien comics now. Yeah, so then what happens is that the company hires editors, and editors are people who put together a team to create what they hope is a really good selling book, and editors might have word from above saying we need a specific type of book to appeal to young audiences, or we need a horror book to appeal to this, that, and the other. So they go and find a creative team, and it usually starts with finding a writer, and they hire them to write either a specific story to fit that vibe, or sometimes writers just pitch to editors and they greenlit their projects, but that's a really hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. And then after the writer's book is confirmed, they hire the penciler, and then they hire the inker, and then the colorist, and then the letterer. And that's how many people it takes to make a comic. It's an editor who puts it all together, a writer who writes the scripts, a penciler who pencils the pages, an inker who inks over those pencils to make them, you know, less scratchy and more legible. Then the colorist comes in and puts color over the whole thing, and then a letterer goes in and puts all the speech balloons in. Now, I'm a penciler inker, so I pencil and ink my own stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also a writer. So, for instance, like on the Turtles book, the Casey Jones book, I wrote the script and then I drew it, penciled and inked it myself. So okay. that's the breakdown of it. And those are the roles that people have to play to create a book.
Sorry, is this still pencil and pen to paper, or are you doing all this digitally?
I do a mix of both. I sort of grew up as a digital artist. I just found that it was quicker to do rough pencils and then figure it out in the ink stage, having mm-hmm. the ability to erase digitally. But then I also found out that when I became a professional, I was missing out on a huge market of people wanting to buy original art, since everything was digital. So if I'm doing something that I think is going to sell, like for instance, I got to draw a cover for the 40th, I think it was the 40th anniversary of Star Wars A New Hope. I made sure that I inked that traditionally so that I could sell it, basically.
Yeah.
Because the thing is like, you know, we get a paycheck to draw the book, and that's our standard rate, but we own the physical artwork ourselves.
Okay.
So we're allowed to sell it at conventions.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then if, you know, and you get your base rate of pay, but then let's say you're on a top book that sells over 50,000 copies a month, a royalty system comes into place where you can make more money. So the better you are at drawing comics and the more you're liked in the industry, you can end up being, you know, super rich and super, well, not super rich. It's comics, guys. But, you know, you could be doing okay for yourself compared to, you know, anybody else down the ladder. So there is a bit of a weird, like, internal want and desire to get better so you can reach those levels in the industry.
Okay.
So if you were an adolescent or a teenager that loves drawing, sketching, and they wanted to go into the field that you're in, what advice would you have for them?
Well, I would say that you should try drawing all day, every day for a week and see how you feel. And when I say all day, every day, I literally mean you wake up, draw, have lunch, draw. Oh, sorry. Have breakfast if you eat breakfast.
Artistic stamina.
Yeah, exactly. Just keep drawing. And if you don't enjoy that, then making comics is not for you, because that's all it is. You know, these books come out monthly. So, and there's deadlines. And that's the most important thing in the comic book industry, is to hit your deadlines. You could be the greatest artist in the world, but if you can't hand it in on time, they're not going to hire you, because the deadline is king above all else. So it's about, you know, for me, I did that and I went, oh, I do actually, I like this. So I pursued it and I was okay with committing that much time to pursuing my life being, you know, getting paid to be creative. So you have to, you know, it's all about passion. You got to love it. So I would recommend kids to do that. And then I'd also recommend them to start going to comic conventions, specifically ones where comic book companies are attending and advertising that they're doing portfolio reviews, because that's still the best way to break in. There's many different ways to break in. You could know somebody, or you may post just a picture online of Batman that's really good, and then suddenly an editor contacts you. So make sure you put your, that's another suggestion, always put your contact details on your social media or on the images that you post, because it makes an editor's life a lot easier to go, I like this, I want to contact them, there's their email, I'm ready to go. Yes, and then yeah, attend comic conventions and try and get portfolio reviews, and that's the way you break in. But you know, I had plenty of portfolio reviews before I broke in, where they said to me, you got to work on this, this, and this, you're not ready, yada yada, because you had to have thick skin in this business, because you will continuously have people tell you that you're not good, but they will give you constructive criticism on how to get better, which is very important.
Yeah, I can see that.
So going back to your comic, Outbreaks, you have a team working with you, correct?
I do, yes. Yeah, so I'm I started the book when I first started working for Marvel in 2017, because as I was drawing professionally in comics, I realized that after I left film school, I thought my creative itch would have been scratch drawing. But then I realized, oh, wait, I went to film school and I started drawing comics because all I actually want to do is tell stories. And then I suddenly had this revelation at the beginning of my career. Oh, crap, I want to be a writer. Like, that's actually what I want to do. But I was so busy drawing professionally for Marvel that I just had no time to create a book myself. But the book I was on was doing okay, and I had a little bit of extra cash, so I started paying for another artist to pencil my script, and they penciled the whole first three issues, because the first three issues of Outbreaks is like a mini story, like, you know, in the anthology sense, it's its own little thing. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, time went by, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to pay for a colorist down the road. But then, you know, COVID struck, and finances went out the window. And I had to shelve the project for a long time, until last year I just realized, like, oh, I've got to make a stance to get this out there, because, you know, I can't just wait around for someone to amplify and continue my career. I need to do it myself. So I studied a bunch of my friends who make successful Kickstarters, and I decided that that was a platform I was interested in pursuing. And that's why I brought this book to Kickstarter, because I'm trying to raise enough money to get the book colored, pay for it to be professionally colored, and then to get it printed. And that's the goal. If I hit 3,000 British pounds, I'll have the money to do that, which is, you know, would be really exciting. And my plan is to make Outbreaks, you know, something very much in the similar vein of a Tales of the Crypt, where it's a continuous anthology story that, you know, I have no end in sight. I have so many different zombie stories I want to tell inside the book. Like, for instance, my brother, who you met, he's written a story for the book called Dog of the Dead, and it's like Homeward Bound meets the zombie apocalypse. And it's all it's the zombie apocalypse from the point of view of a Labrador, and it's so cute and lovely, and I love it so much. So that's what we're trying to do, is just, I don't want to be writing your stereotypical survival story, because everyone's seen that in zombies. Yeah. We know what that's like. I'm more interested in doing bizarre things, like, for instance, there's a backup story in Outbreaks which is going to be in every single issue, and it's called Dead Eye Dick, and it's about a guy in the 1950s who gets the first ever experimental eye transplant, except what he doesn't realize is that it's an undead eye, and the undead eye slowly starts taking over his body and wants him to eat human flesh, otherwise he'll turn into a zombie himself. But it's like a film noir sort of crime mystery, but at the same time a superhero story, because he starts to gain amazing abilities from having this undead eye in his head. So that's what I'm trying to do, is just different stuff.
Okay, so, and I know you're actually more than halfway there, and it's only three days into March. I know you're running your Kickstarter through the end of the month. Now, what happens? Okay, so you meet your funding goal for the first episode, or the first edition.
Yeah.
How do you continue on? I mean, do you have to get like subscriptions to the comic, or how does that work?
So my plan right now is to get issue one printed and colored via Kickstarter. If I get funded, great, because that's the main goal I want. The book can also get overfunded, where I'll get more proceeds, and if that does happen, then one, I'll be making all the merchandise that I'm selling better quality, and, you know, adding extra freebies to people that have backed it and things like that. But my another goal is to make enough money to get issue two colored just on this Kickstarter campaign, because then the plan is that I'm going to be basically launching in the future 2 to 3 Kickstarters a year. And that's where people can buy the book. So it will continue on through Kickstarter, so fans can enjoy it that way. But then on the other side of things, I've been talking to local comic book stores and comic book stores in America, and I'd like to start trying to send copies out to popular comic stores so that the book can be sold worldwide and in stores. I mean, I want this thing to be the zombie book that as a kid walking into Jambalaya, New Jersey, I would go, oh my God, I got to pick this up. This is exactly the thing I want for me.
And it will be available in the States, right?
Yeah. I mean, the Kickstarter campaign, it ships worldwide. So if you live in America, you can get it. You know, the pledges start as low with just getting a digital copy, all the way up to stupid money if you want to buy original art from the book and stuff like that, which I did sell the other day, which was crazy. Someone donated or pledged £750, and they, you know, that's amazing. They're going to get original art from the book and all this stuff, and I'm very humbled by the whole experience.
Yeah, that's cool. And I did order the C variant, which is the green zombie head. So
awesome. That's
I fully intend on framing that, hanging in our movie room here.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, that's that seems to be the most popular cover. That's the one that's selling the most, which is very interesting.
I think it's the zombies.
Yeah, and also
you think?
Yeah. That's the cover. That's my homage to Tom McFarlane as well. So it all comes full circle.
I don't want to get you into trouble, but do you prefer, and maybe you can't answer this, but do you prefer drawing Marvel or DC Comics?
Depends on who I'm drawing. I mean, you know, this past year I've had the luxury of being able to work on Batman and Joker, and that universe means a lot to me. I mean, heck, me and my brother have a podcast about Batman the Animated Series. Right. But I also love working on Spider-Man at Marvel, so it really just depends on the properties that are given to me. Like, would I rather draw Batman or Spider-Man? You'd have to find me in the right mindset of how I feel at the time. Mm-hmm. But as it goes down the list, it's like, well, would you rather draw Deadpool or Aquaman? I'm going to choose Deadpool all day long, you know.
So let's say somebody who's a complete novice like us. what I'm curious about is when you're drawing for different magazines, do you have a different style when you draw for Marvel than you do for DC, or do you like keep the same theme?
Well, that's actually quite an interesting question, because I definitely change it up a little bit. If I'm drawing Batman, I'm adding way more shadows into my artwork and trying to make it feel a bit more film noir. But then, for instance, I've drawn a lot of comedy books at Marvel. Like, I drew a whole trade paperback of Spider-Ham with them, and that, you know, looks completely different to my Batman stuff, because I'm trying to make it look more like a Saturday morning cartoon with less shadow work, etc. So it really does depend, but overall I like drawing in the noir style, the Batman style. So that's what, those are the projects that really interest me, you know, like Daredevil, Batman, all that really dark, gritty stuff. But I still have a lot of fun drawing all the silly, goofy stuff as well.
Well, that's good. Got a wide range.
Our kids all have a different style of artwork. Like our son, Nash, he's 11. And
he's already like drawing like people, and they've got the sound bubbles coming off of them and putting what they write. And, you know, he's really honed his handwriting craft. So, I mean, he's That's got awesome. like 100 pages of just doodles, and it's like inanimate objects that are like talking, like a pencil's talking. And he does have comics that he wrote, and they're hilarious. And
well, that's also, those are like the funny papers. Those are old school comics. Those are the original comics, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. He really enjoys it. So it's kind of like, it's inspiring to see that there's people out there that take that love of what they do and they turn it into their careers, because that's hard to come by. Not everybody gets that opportunity.
No, absolutely not. But I've always just been a person that I can't, I have to try and achieve my goals, because my personal philosophy in life is you only live once. So I'm trying to always achieve what I want in life, because for me there is no other alternative. When if I truly give up on something, it means that I really didn't want to do it in the first place, basically.
Yeah, your heart's just not in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you think you're going to be doing this until your old age, or are you going to retire from it? Or
I hope so. I mean, I'm, I I'd like to slowly move away from drawing interior artwork. And when I say interiors, I mean drawing the stories in the comics, because it does take up a lot of time and it's a lot of hard work. And I do feel like comic book artists are extremely underpaid for the amount of hours and work that they put into what they do. And if you notice, in the comic book industry, all the top famous guys, for the most part, have stopped drawing interiors and just draw covers and things like that, because they've hit a point where they don't have to worry about doing that anymore. So I'll always draw covers in a sense, or big, you know, splashes, pages of stuff that I'm interested in. But I'd like to move away from art eventually and focus more on writing, because that really is my true passion. And that's what I really want to do. I mean, right now, today I've been writing all day, because not only is Outbreaks a book that I'm writing, but I actually got a book with a company. I can't say yet, but it's been greenlit, and it's a creator-owned project of mine that I'm writing, and I'm not drawing it. So that's really exciting for me, because it means I'm now getting the opportunities to show off my skills as a writer without having to piggyback off of my skills as an artist, which is awesome. That's the direction I want to go in, and slowly but surely I'm going to get there. But God, this stuff takes a long time to do. Sure. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's pretty much like everything. You know, you're always a work in progress, and you're always trying to better yourself and
transform into something.
Yeah, kind of branch out, and then as you're learning, you're finding your own little niche and what you like better than, you know, this or better than that, or what you're better at than somebody else.
Yeah, if you feel like you can put more of your heart and your talent into writing, there it would make sense to go down that path, you know, a little bit more, and kind of leave the, but that doesn't mean you can't sketch on your own time, or, you know, do small projects or something like that.
Oh my God. So. That's the funny thing about drawing professionally is that since it's my job, I never draw for myself anymore. the only time I drew for myself now is when I'm drawing for Outbreaks. And that's like the other day I was drawing a cover for it and I was having fun. I was like, oh my God, I forgot what this was like. Like no one's paying me to do this. I'm doing this for me. This is great.
Which is probably one of the most fortunate things about starting your own comic, is that you get to do it. I mean, yes, it is technically work, but it's your work. And you get to decide, you know, where this shadow goes, or what this character does. Or so not only are you writing it, but you're also, I mean, it's a creation. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's
your baby.
That's the most fun I could have in this world. Is stuff like that. I always created stuff when I was a kid. I used to make clay animations all the time and sculpt. And then, you know, if I was to get a video game, I would always spend like 3 hours on the create your own character segment, because I'm like, I gotta make sure this is perfect and stuff like that. I just love creating and especially creating things to entertain myself, because at the end of the day, I'm my biggest fan, and I'm my most strictest and critical audience. And that's what gets me through life, basically.
Good philosophy. Yeah. For the creative people out there, which we are not, but
you created a podcast.
Yeah.
As an epidemiologist, I just have to ask, do your research when it comes to outbreaks and variants and whatnot?
Remind me what an epidemiologist is again.
It's a scientist that studies epidemics.
When I was making that my first ever comic, Dino Zombies, that's when, do you remember that news article came out that was all like, there's this fungi that, you know, controls animals' brains and turns them into zombies. And I remember reading that and being like, oh, well, what if that's what actually wiped out the dinosaurs, and then the Ice Age came and they're not dead, they're just dormant under like Antarctica, they're coming back, right? So that's when I used science to explain something. But then, you know, The Last of Us did it.
Well, yeah, the fun thing is kind of taking kind of taking science and doing what you want to with it to, you know, scare the crap out of people.
Yeah, me and my brother have always enjoyed, because he likes to write as well, we've always enjoyed taking established things and expand that are based in reality and expanding on them to make them, you know, either, you know, scary or just entertaining. For a while, I was writing a story about Point Nemo. Do you guys know what Point Nemo is?
Point Nemo, isn't that the, that's the spot in the ocean that's the farthest away from any landmass?
And it's, you know, in Point Nemo, the closest human to you are people that are up in space in you know, the International Space Station.
Okay.
Wow, I didn't know that existed.
That's how remote it is, and it's, and Point Nemo is used for when satellites go around the Earth and they break up and get destroyed. Originally, they started falling to Earth and causing chaos, and somebody said, we need a place for all this space junk to go, and they decided, well, Point Nemo is literally the most deserted spot on the planet. Let's send it all there. So I started developing a story. Like, well, that's interesting. Why is it the most deserted thing? And I found out that, like, nothing lives there except for, like, one species of crab and stuff. And that inspired me to start writing a story that was like, well, let's find out a reason why that happens. And maybe there's some, you know, spooky stuff going on there. And that's the book that is developed into the one that I'm creating right now, which I was working on today. So that really excites me, is to take something that's in real life, like you said, and expand on it to make it seem plausible, essentially.
Yeah, well, what scares people is the fear of the unknown. And if you're having things that are like completely mutated or something like that, that's scary to a lot of people.
Absolutely.
You just write down Point Nemo.
I did. I'm going to use it against him. Is when he acts like a jerk, I'm going to tell him, go to Point Nemo.
I'll probably hear it a lot. Okay. A, why don't you shout out your podcast again? And B, let everybody know where they can go to fund your Kickstarter for your new comic, Outbreaks.
Okay. So the podcasts that I do are Batman the Animated Series Podcast and Spider-Man the Animated Series Podcast. We come out with an episode practically every week on either one of them. And you can find either of those podcasts on anywhere where you like to listen to podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, etc. Just search Batman the Animated Series Podcast or Spider-Man the Animated Series Podcast and they will pop up. That's a really great fun. It's a silly, fun show that me and my brother make a lot of dick and fart jokes on. It's a good time.
And then we do that on our show too.
Yeah, that's what you got to do, right? And then my Kickstarter, you can either go to kickstarter.com and search for Outbreaks, or you can go to my website, which is speechcomics.com, and that's speechcomics.com, and there'll be a place where you can click on that, the front page of that website, that will take you directly to the Kickstarter. And also, if you'd like to read the first 5 pages for free of Outbreaks, then on my website, if you sign up for my newsletter, you'll immediately be sent a PDF that where you can read the book for yourself to see if it's for you or it's not for you. So that's the best place to find it.
I haven't done that yet. I want to wait for the comic itself.
We're your two newest fans.
That's absolutely fine. I totally understand that.
We're a big fan of zombie movies. They're, you know, well, yeah, zombie movies. And I'm more partial to the current zombie movies. I mean, like the Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, 2004, I think it was.
Yeah. You know, her and I saw it in the theaters. And that was one of those movies where it was like, oh my God, you know, because it's so brutal. And it's like, you know, as soon as that opening scene with the neighbor girl, I'm like, we are definitely getting this on Blu-ray when it comes out. And so you know, we go back and maybe it's just because they feel more cheesy, the older movies. Now we have seen the, was it 1990, the Tom Savini, Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
I prefer that one to the George Romero.
Right. That's fair.
Night of the Living Dead.
Well, what's really fun about comics is, well, we've seen Dawn of the Dead and the remake and we've seen it over and over again. We know how it ends. But if you have a new comic that's coming out in which you have no idea how it ends, of course, you're going to be like trying to get the first one to know what's going to happen.
I actually recently rewatched that 2004 Dawn of the Dead. And I always knew it was made by Zack Snyder, and that was like his breakout movie. But I never knew that James Gunn wrote it. I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And you know, James Gunn, he made Guardians of the Galaxy, and he made the Suicide Squad. And now he runs the DC movie universe. So that was that was really interesting to see. But yeah,
you guys are a good company.
Yeah, no, he makes the actual money in the comic book world. That's for sure. But no, Dawn of the Dead, it does hold up. There's a great soundtrack to that film. One of my favorite scenes in that movie is the sort of big band version of Down with the Sickness by Disturbed.
Oh yeah, yes. We love that.
Yeah, when it's like, yeah, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. And all the zombies are like walking around. It's like a montage scene. It's brilliant.
That guy's name is like Dick Eater or something. Like the singer for that band is a really weird name. I can't think of what it is off the top of my head, but it's like Dick Eater or Dick something.
Yeah, I've listened to a few of his songs, and they're all just like songs you never thought would be like a crooner version. It's great.
Like a really hardcore rock song, and they make it sound like Muzak.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it sounds like Frank Sinatra. It's great.
I think that pretty much wraps it up. I mean, is there anything else you want to cover?
Just check out Outbreaks, and I hope you enjoy it. And if you like Marvel and DC stuff, then if you go read Joker, the Man Who Laughs, which is out, I draw the backup stories in that where I draw Joker getting up to all types of strange shenanigans. So if that's your cup of tea, that's available in any comic book store you can go to. And if it's not, then please check out Outbreaks, because, like I said, I think we're nearly 60% funded, but there's still a long way to go, a lot of money to raise. So anything would help out. Even just sharing it on social media goes a long way. So, yeah, just thank you guys for having me and letting me talk about my book. I've had a lot of fun. And, yeah, cheers.
Well, thank you for being a really good guest. And you've inspired us. We're going to be comic people now, I think. Yeah.
Actually, I do have one more question. Batman's always been my favorite superhero, and Joker always my favorite villain. So, from the movies, favorite Batman and favorite Joker. I guess there's only two Jokers to choose from. Well, three. So, but favorite Batman and favorite Joker.
Batman 89 means a lot to me because it was just, that's my childhood Batman. Mm-hmm. It's anytime I revisit that movie, it's like putting on a comfy pair of slippers.
That's my favorite one too.
And Jack Nicholson has always been one of my favorite actors just in general. There's something about him that I just find incredibly charming. My vote is Jack Nicholson Joker all the way, because he takes what I like about from the comic, which is Joker being more of a gangster than a clown. The Dark Knight is, I would say, is probably the best Batman movie ever made. Heath Ledger did an amazing Joker, but they did their own thing, and they're lucky that it worked, because it really did work. But that character was more of an anarchist, and I'd never seen the Joker as an anarchist. He's more of just this guy who is infatuated by Batman and wants to make his life a living hell.
Yeah, a wisecracking nemesis.
Exactly, but really funny. And you know, I never laughed at a single thing that Heath Ledger did in that movie, because it was extremely serious. So Jack Nicholson all the way. I love that Joker. And my favorite Batman on screen, I don't know. I personally really hated the new Batman movie. It was not my cup of tea at all. But I did enjoy him playing Batman. What's his name from Twilight?
Will Pattinson?
No.
Robert Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson, yeah. Great casting choice. I just didn't like the movie that he was in. But I don't know. I guess it's going to sound basic, but I guess it's Michael Keaton's Batman.
I was going to say the same thing.
I just think there's something about the way he speaks in that movie, and just the way he stands and looks, like it's just great.
He's a natural.
Michael Keaton has been one of my favorite actors for a long time, and him and Batman, him and Beetlejuice, just Yeah.
The scene where the guy falls into the acid.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah. I mean, God, I love Michael Keaton as well. His resurgence since Birdman has been really great to watch. I loved him in Birdman. I loved him in The Founder. He's even in the Spider-Man movies. Like, he's, and now he's back as Batman, which is exciting as hell, you know? It's just crazy.
Well, you can tell he has some integrity in his craft. Because, he's not going to take just some, you know, stupid role that he's going to get a paycheck for. That's what we like about him. But I digress.
No, I agree with that. Absolutely.
So your Instagram is Robson Inc. R-O-B-S-O-N-I-N-K. So for any of you listeners,
all my social media.
Yeah, okay, all your social media. So go, listeners out there, go search out Robson Inc. R-O-B-S-O-N-I-N-K. All one word. And help this gentleman here get his new comic off the ground and into the ethos. No, that's probably not the right word. Into the real world. Help him realize his dream. We have backed it on his Kickstarter. It is I think you said it was a Walking Dead meets Black Mirror.
Yes. So Black Mirror is an anthology series that basically has different stories all revolving around technology. Outbreaks is the same concept, except it all revolves around zombies. So it's different little stories, all revolving around zombies, and different takes on that. And it's just a lot of fun. I love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And like we said, we're not comic people, but I'm really looking forward to this series.
Well, thank you so much.
I sincerely hope that you can get it to where you want it. And, yeah, well, I appreciate it. I thank you for coming on, and now I'm rambling. So,
thank you guys for having me. I appreciate that so much. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So for Extreme Horror Replay, I'm waving my arms like somebody's watching. I have been Ben. My beautiful wife Nancy is sitting next to me, and we have Will from the UK who is bringing his Outbreaks comic to the world. Thank you guys, and we'll talk to you all later.